Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are opening up the playbook for digital transformation, and we're looking at a really specific case. How one
It really is a 10-year success story. And it breaks down into these really clear sort of teachable phases. They were making fundamental choices way back in 2013 that paid off massively in 2020.
During the crisis,
yeah. And those same choices are still yielding huge efficiency gains for them today.
So our mission today is to unpack this whole journey phase by phase. We want to show you exactly how they went from fixing, you know, basic IT issues to handling the absolute cutting edge of artificial intelligence.
And I think it really demonstrates the strategic planning. It always trumps reactive spending.
Okay, so let's start at the very beginning. We're talking around 2013. This is when they first realized their existing tech setup was, well, failing them.
That's really where the crisis begins. They were facing an aging, unsustainable infrastructure.
What does it actually look like on the ground?
Think of it like a leaky, rusty pipe system. It just couldn't deliver what was needed for a modern, flexible curriculum. Teachers were really constrained by systems that didn't talk to each other. Sharing resources was inefficient, to put it mildly.
That feeling of being boxed in by old systems. That's so common, isn't it? In almost any industry.
It is.
So when the leadership decided they needed a massive overhaul, what was the main driver? Was it the IT team saying, we need better servers, or was it coming from the teachers?
Oh, it was overwhelmingly pedagogical. It came from the teaching side.
Interesting.
The leadership, they knew they needed tools that enabled collaboration, not ones that hindered it. And that's what led them to the Google ecosystem, specifically Google Workspace for Education.
And what was the immediate tangible benefit there? What was the hook?
Time. It was all about time.
Right.
The ability for staff to collaborate on live, editable cloud files, it just dramatically reduced the time they spent on shared planning, on curriculum development.
So no more emailing attachments back and forth.
Exactly. It eliminated all those version control issues, the endless administrative friction. The deputy head teacher, Scott Carrington, he summed it up perfectly. He said, our goal was to remove barriers. It was a pedagogical decision, not just a technical one.
That distinction is so important. You choose the tool that serves your actual mission, not just the trendiest gadget.
Precisely.
But even with the best tools, you still have to get people to use them. You can't just drop a new system on 500 staff and hope for the best. How did they manage that culture shift?
They were very clever about it. They executed this brilliant, calculated, three-stage adoption model. It wasn't a big bang, a revolution. It was an evolution.
Okay, so what was stage one?
Stage one was start small. They just introduced Google Workspace to the staff on the platforms they already had. So there was no immediate hardware shock.
So it's a way to build confidence before you spend a lot of capital. Makes sense. What was next?
Stage two was expand usage. And this is where the hardware started to matter. They deployed bookable Chromebook trolleys.
Ah, so not a full one-to-one rollout yet.
No, not yet. These trolleys were a conscious bridge to a future one-to-one model. It let staff and students experiment with this new lightweight OS without this huge immediate capital outlay. And crucially, at the same time, they established digital champions. This was a peer support system of staff and students, which helped get internal buy-in and, you know, drive some real enthusiasm.
I love that idea of peer champions. It means the change isn't just coming top down from IT. It's being advocated for bottom up by the users themselves.
And that naturally led to the final stage.
Which was?
Influence change. By this point, confidence was high. The platform had proven its worth. And the technology became fully embedded. Google Classroom wasn't just a nice add-on anymore.
It was essential.
It became the essential backbone for homework, for resource sharing, for all their home learning. They built this culture years before it became a national necessity.
So after this multi-year effort, what were the results? Did this slow, methodical approach actually pay off?
It absolutely did. The data is very clear. This foundational model delivered at least £20,000 in immediate operational savings. And that's likely from things like reduced server maintenance and just better time management. But more importantly, the school's student progress was, at the same time, being tracked in the top 5% nationally.
So it wasn't just a cost-cutting exercise.
Not at all. The strategic shift directly fueled educational excellence. And that's the ultimate vindication of the whole pedagogical decision.
That correlation is fascinating. It just shows that robust modern infrastructure, it isn't just a utility. It's a genuine driver of educational outcomes. But that infrastructure and their whole strategy was about to face the ultimate unplanned stress test.
Right. And that brings us to the infamous year of 2020. We're talking about the COVID-19 pandemic.
Of course.
Which forced UK schools into this chaotic, sudden shift to remote learning. I mean, you remember the national scramble for devices, for platforms?
Oh, absolutely. Schools were struggling just to maintain basic communication. And the beauty of this Redencourt story is that, well, they weren't scrambling. Because they'd stuck to that 10-year vision, they were arguably one of the most prepared schools in the entire country. How quick was their transition?
It was effectively instant. Their maturity was their resilience. They had already invested all that time and training into a fully mature one-to-one program, and their curriculum was already built on Google Workspace.
So for them, moving the classroom home wasn't a huge transformation.
It was just a shift in location.
Yeah.
Their access anywhere philosophy meant learning was truly continuous.
I mean, you hear these stories of schools printing off worksheets and driving them to students' homes during that time. What was the day-to-day experience for a student at Redencourt?
Every student had their Chromebook. They were already completely familiar with Google Classroom, so they just continued to follow this structured curriculum. But critically, teachers weren't just lecturing into a void.
Right, because of the collaboration tools.
Exactly. Because the platform enabled that real-time work on live documents, teachers could keep sharing resources, setting tasks, and giving immediate, meaningful feedback. The connection between the student and teacher, it just didn't break down.
That's a powerful statement about preparedness. And that success, it must have gotten some national attention.
It did. The Department for Education, the DFE, they recognized this stability, and they selected Redencourt as an EdTech demonstrator school.
So they became the example.
Think about that validation. A school that was struggling with aging tech in 2013 was now being tasked with training other institutions nationally on how to build a resilient, cloud-first model. They became the blueprint for crisis response.
It's just proof that prioritizing that pedagogical vision first, years before the crisis hit, was the ultimate strategic insurance policy.
Absolutely. It moved technology from being a hindrance to a core enabler of the trust's entire mission.
Okay, so let's jump forward a bit to phase four, which is 2024 and 2025. They've solved the crisis, but every organization faces the relentless march of hardware depreciation. And in this case, the challenge was a large fleet of older Windows 10 devices that were non-compliant for the Windows 11 upgrade.
And for any CFO or IT manager listening, that is the sound of a massive capital sinkhole opening up.
It's the moment every organization dreads, isn't it? You have perfectly functional hardware that suddenly becomes a security and compliance liability.
And it forces this huge, unplanned spending cycle just to stay current. But SFAET and XMA, their partner, they didn't see a liability. They saw a huge opportunity.
And what was that opportunity? What was the genius solution they deployed to dodge this problem?
The solution was deploying Chrome OS Flex.
Okay. For listeners who might not be familiar, what is Flex?
So Flex is a lightweight, cloud-based operating system from Google. And it lets you take virtually any older PC or Mac hardware, even hardware that's 10 years old, and convert it into a fast, secure Chrome OS machine.
So it bypasses the local processing demands that bog down the older Windows systems?
That's it. So instead of scrapping machines and spending capital on new ones, they essentially gave the hardware a complete software transplant. It made them functionally modern again.
So what was the hard dollar value of this? What did they save?
The numbers are remarkable. The trust avoided over £40,000 in direct capital expenditure.
£40,000.
Over £40,000. By converting 220 legacy devices. 50 of those were in 2024, and another 170 are scheduled for 2025. The CFO, Sarah King, was very specific about it. She said it turned a depreciation problem into a direct positive impact on our budget.
That is a radical shift in how you view sunk costs. It moves hardware from an expense to a renewable resource.
Right.
But the gains weren't just financial, were they? What about the pain point for the IT team actually managing these devices?
That's where the operational efficiency really shines. The IT team saw massive gains in provisioning time. Using the zero-touch deployment that's just inherent in Chrome OS Flex, the time it took to set up a device, it just dropped dramatically.
How dramatically are we talking?
We're talking approximately 20 minutes for a device with Chrome OS Flex versus about an hour on their comparable operating systems.
That's a huge difference.
It is. And when you multiply that 40-minute savings across 220 devices plus all the future rollouts, that time just compounds. It's hundreds of hours of proactive IT work instead of reactive manual labor. That is precious staff time reclaimed.
And while they're saving all this time and money on hardware, they were also strengthening their security posture.
Exactly. They invested in upgrading to Google Workspace for Education Plus, securing the whole platform with enhanced features, just as they were getting ready to tackle the newest and maybe the trickiest challenge yet.
The safe integration of artificial intelligence.
The very same.
The buzz around generative AI is, it's deafening. But for any institution dealing with sensitive student and staff data, governance and safety are enormous challenges. You can't just let teachers use public consumer-grade models.
No, you can't. And they absolutely prioritized control and compliance. They chose to deploy Google AI Pro for education.
And that's a licensed, governed solution.
It's specifically designed for educational environments, yes. And that choice ensures data sovereignty and policy compliance. This isn't just letting staff use Gemini on the public web. It's a tightly controlled environment where the trust maintains full control over all the data and the interactions.
That distinction is so critical. They're making sure the AI works for them, not that they're working for the AI's data collection needs. So practically speaking, what are the teachers actually doing with it?
The biggest benefit is reclaiming professional preparation time. We know teachers spend huge amounts of time creating differentiated materials for diverse classroom needs.
Sure.
Staff are now using Gemini to instantly generate different lesson plans tailored to specific student groups, or to draft complex quizzes, or even just quickly outline a Google Slides presentation from a core text. It's like having an incredibly high-powered administrative assistant.
That efficiency gain giving time back to teachers to actually teach, that has to be invaluable. What about on the IT and admin side? Does AI help reduce the support burden there?
It does. The head of data and IT, Jamie Adams, he highlighted this. Gemini helps by summarizing administrative meetings, pulling out key action points, and just improving the quality of their internal self-help resources.
So if staff can find answers faster, they don't call the help desk.
That's the idea.
But the core of that Education Plus investment is about protection, right? The promise of the platform is one thing, but has that security dashboard actually stopped real-world threats?
It has, and this is probably the most compelling detail from the sources. The security dashboard is not theoretical. It is actively protecting them. The system has already helped the trust avoid 4 separate phishing campaigns that tried to target staff credentials.
4 serious campaigns dodged, that's huge.
It is. It speaks to the visibility and the automated defenses the system offers. And on top of that, the platform provides automated GDPR compliance through features like an email sandbox and data retention policies.
So it's proactive, not just reactive.
As Jamie Adams put it, the dashboard gives them the control and visibility we need, allowing us to confidently block threats before they ever reach an end user. They aren't just reacting to threats, they are blocking them at the gate.
This whole decade-long transformation, from the aging hardware to becoming AI pioneers, It was clearly enabled by that long-term strategic partnership with XMA. It sounds like they were much more than just a procurement vendor.
The relationship absolutely evolved. XMA started out handling device procurement, sure, but they quickly transitioned into a consultative partner. They helped the trust build the detailed business cases for these investments.
For things like the initial move to Google Workspace or this more recent AI deployment?
Exactly. Over the decade, XMA helps SFAET scale their commitment from an initial 2 licenses all the way up to 28. It shows that scalable, targeted support.
And that long-term commitment, I mean, even sponsoring key events like Teacher Learner, that's what allowed SFAET to maintain this incredibly consistent vision.
Precisely. They provided the strategic pathway and the technical expertise for SFE's pedagogical vision to become a technological reality.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what is the core takeaway for you, the listener, for someone who might be grappling with infrastructure costs or maybe the fear of integrating AI into your own organization?
I think the ultimate lesson from Redencourt is that their success was driven by leading with a pedagogical, a mission-based vision, not by following technology trends.
They didn't ask, what's the cool new tech we should buy?
No. They asked, how can we create a collaborative, resilient learning environment? The technology, whether it was Chromebooks, Flex, or Gemini, that was just the most efficient path to that goal. And that long-term focus is what guaranteed them resilience in 2020 and incredible efficiency in 2025.
They treated technology as the enabler of their mission, not as a burden.
And that leads to the final provocative thought we want to leave you with today. Given that this trust successfully transitioned technology from being a constant recurring cost burden to a true operational asset. I mean, reclaiming 40,000 pounds in capital through the intelligent use of Chromio Flex.
Right.
How should your organization reevaluate its own aging infrastructure? Don't view that fleet of 5 or 6 year old devices as a problem that has to be scrapped. See it as a strategic opportunity, just waiting to be redeployed with a modern, lightweight, and resilient OS.
Transform your perspective, and you might just transform your budget. A great challenge for us all. Thank you for joining us for the deep dive.
We'll catch you next time.